one. Hey, Noah, have you ever been investigated for anything? FBI, CIA, local police?
Am I legally obligated to answer that question?
No, you are not. I haven't been investigated. No real investigation. You know, people just looking into my background unnecessarily.
It happens. There's probably a lot of investigating that neither of us are aware of. So that's how it goes.
Learn how you can save time and tuition dollars with Wilmington University's new Dual Credit Advantage. Go to wilmu.edu/dual credit.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Speaking of investigations, this is the Sixers Talk podcast presented to you by Wilmington University, WilmU Works. Noah, the Sixers are being investigated by the NBA for what is perceived by some other GMs and front office officials that the Sixers and James Harden, maybe P.J. Tucker and Daniel House had a little handshake agreement before free agency started. And with tampering rules, and it's just a lot of speculation out there. We're going to piece it apart, take it apart, and look at it. What was your initial thoughts when all this broke?
Not surprising, because we know the Sixers organization tends to be under a microscope, and the pre-existing relationships with all three of these guys were well known, and the type of thing that you figured rival teams would look suspiciously upon. I do think it's interesting and a little different from the typical tampering situation with James Harden in particular. Derek Bodner's Daily Six newsletter had a good breakdown on some of the historical context here. So back in the day, Sixers fans might remember Joe Smith, the former number one pick, and the Minnesota Timberwolves got in a lot of trouble because they had this agreement where they would give him 3 1-year very modest contracts below, you know, his worth in the NBA. And then that would, you know, after those 3 years were up, they would have his bird rights, and then they would give him a long extension. So that is a more extreme version of what the Sixers are being investigated for with Harden, which is salary cap circumvention. So essentially that they've got this short-term deal with Harden for now, and then wink, wink, there's an understanding that once this initial contract is up, there will be a long-term lucrative extension to come. Personally, I'd be really surprised, number one, if they did that in a concrete way or anything resembling what Minnesota did back in the day when the Timberwolves were docked 5 first-round picks. And I also think just leaving evidence of that would be a shocker for an executive as experienced as Daryl Morey, who fully understands, you know, what is illegal and what is allowed under the NBA's CBA. But the tampering, yeah, that happens across the league, and the NBA is now looking specifically at the Sixers. So we do have this recent precedent of teams being having a second-round pick taken away. And perhaps that or something along those lines happens if the league does find that the Sixers, you know, made premature contact with P.J. Tucker, Daniel House, et cetera. But I'm fascinated to see how it plays out. From where I'm sitting right now, I'd be stunned if there's like a severe penalty for the Sixers doing something illegal with the salary cap circumvention. But did they make contact that they technically weren't allowed to before 6 p.m.? I think probably. I think the fact that we get these deals leaking out at 6:01, 6:02 tells you that the Sixers are not alone in that particular, you know, technical wrongdoing that has just become the norm across the NBA.
Yeah, to pick on something you just said, the recent trend, last year the Miami Heat and the Chicago Bulls both lost second-round draft picks for Lonzo Ball, Kyle Lowry, respectively. I could see something maybe along that, but I don't even remember all the details and what evidence that the NBA had. I know right now Daryl Morey has been working with the NBA. I know they're going to look at text messages and emails. So hopefully, well, not hopefully, because what's considered tampering, it seems like it kind of changes from years to years. And each sport is different. I know at times it's, for the most part, it's front office can't talk to players. In some sports, it's the players can't talk to other players about their pending free agency and things like that. I'm not too worried about it personally. I'm interested to see how it all plays out and what the NBA may or may not find, but I'm not losing any sleep over. I hope the Sixers don't either. To see what happens going forward.
Yeah, just the few years covering the team, I have noticed that I think probably the fan base perceives like official NBA action to be a bigger deal than it actually is. And I understand anytime the league does something in an official capacity, it's sending a statement of some kind. So even during the postseason when the Sixers were fined for, you know, inaccurate Joel Embiid injury reporting, you know, the actual impact is negligible. It's just a fine that is a very small percentage of what the Sixers, you know, revenue is, but they're indicating the Sixers did something wrong and fans tend to not like that. But I think in this particular situation, perhaps you initially see the NBA's doing an investigation and you're like, wow, this is terrible. This is gravely concerning for the Sixers. But I think if you take a step back, it would just be strange for the NBA to do something against its recent precedent of docking a second round pick for tampering, you know, just making contact before that, you know, 6 p.m. period. And I think it's also notable that those particular cases were sign-in trades. So the NBA was more likely to find a violation in those cases because, like, sign and trades, you know, you need multiple parties involved and all of that. I think in this case, provided that the Sixers did not get really sloppy with their contact with James Harden, anything beyond a second round pick or two would really stun me here.
The sign and trade point, I think that's a fabulous, phenomenal point. I forgot about that aspect of it. I don't think I have much more to say. Let's see what happens. I'm not losing any sleep over it. I know when I got the notifications, just a little shoulder shrug and whatever.
Yeah, I know initially probably some fans were like, well, okay, you know, Sixers aren't the only team that did this. The Jalen Brunson Knicks contact seemed especially egregious. And then in recent days, the NBA has indeed opened an investigation into the New York Knicks landing Jalen Brunson, as everyone knew they would weeks before they were supposed to be talking with him. So I think at least the Sixers are not the only ones in this position. But it is true that we were hearing like 7 to 10, maybe even earlier, you know, very early before the start of free agency, that PJ Tucker was going to become a Sixer. So I understand that just seeming to be an egregious example of tampering in this year.
So before we move on, like Harden, he opted out of his 47 guarantee. He dropped down to, was
33 for this year, and then
player option next year. Mm-hmm. So I'm intrigued because he played with PJ Tucker in Houston as well as Daniel House. If it wasn't those guys, and if it was players he hadn't had before, Daryl Morey had it had on one of his rosters before, would it still be an investigation? Because I wonder how much of the fact that they all were in Houston at the same time played a role in it. That just popped into my head now. Because if it was just like, if it was Noah Levitt free agent, so they can sign Noah Levitt to a big deal or to a 2-year deal, or Daniel Palmeiro so they can sign to a 2-year deal, would the NBA, would other GMs and executives be making a deal out of it if there wasn't prior relationships involved?
I think it's less likely, and I think Daryl Morey specifically, we know he can be cutthroat in his dealings with other executives around the league. And this offseason, he has, to some extent, reassembled, you know, the Philadelphia Rockets. So, yeah, there are a few factors here where other teams, I think, are more likely to call the Sixers out or say to the NBA, hey, it looks like something sketchy is going on in Philadelphia. I think, yeah, that's just the reality. And the Sixers, I think, just overall, always seem to be under a bit of a microscope since the process days with Adam Silver. And that is the case again here. And as I said, I think with PJ Tucker, that was one of the names you were hearing in, you know, well before you were supposed to be hearing it, as far as, yes, he is going to land with the Sixers. So I do understand that aspect of it. And then, yeah, I think with James Harden taking a pay cut, there's nothing wrong with that. He is allowed to care about the team and want it to be possible for the team to upgrade its depth and all of that. And then the Joe Smith-ish angle is just so unusual that that actually happens and you're able to prove it. I think that part of it to me is a little odd. And as I said, yeah, I'd be really surprised if the Sixers are found of that particular wrongdoing by the NBA. Yeah.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
So transitioning from the NBA investigating the Sixers for the James Harden contract, Daniel House, and then also newly acquired PJ Tucker, I wanted to talk about the Sixers rotation. And since we just left talking about PJ Tucker, I want to start there. What would a Sixers rotation look like this season? We'll get in season, who's going to match up, stagger minutes, and what it could look like in the postseason. And since I wanted to start with PJ Tucker, who could ideally work as a small ball five, let me know what you think of this. If I know this is making everything nice and even and neat, and we know when games start, it's not going to be this neat. But PJ Tucker, about 28 to 30 minutes a game, half of those minutes as a small ball five to spell Joel Embiid, or if Paul Reed is in foul trouble. What do you think of that? I'm not sure if you looked up or if your eyes roll, but what do you think of that?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Yeah, that is. I got to break that habit. Kind of when I'm thinking or finding words, I tend to look up. So there's never any.
Yeah, I'm messing with you. You know it's all love.
No. 28 to 30 minutes seems about right. I think the Sixers will be cognizant of pacing Tucker for the playoffs. He is 37 years old, but I think he clearly should be the starter for this team and should play heavy minutes. As far as half of those being at center, that does seem high to me. I would expect Paul Reed to continue to get opportunities off the bat at center, though I think quite highly of Tucker's ability to play the five and do it well. I still think Paul Reed should and will be in this mix. Yes, we all know that it took a while for him to gain Doc Rivers' trust, but I think he did that. And I think he exceeded expectations for the most part in the playoffs, even though we all know about the foul trouble and discipline issues. I do think you've got more evidence now that he can play the backup five at a quality level. So that volume of minutes seems right, but I don't think he's the sole backup center by any means. I think as things stand, the Sixers will play a few guys at that spot. Tucker will be one of them, and I think Reed will be as well.
I definitely think Reed will be get backup minutes. I was just throwing an idea at you. Maybe Tucker like 7 minutes, Reed seven plus as a backup for Embiid. I was thinking, who would you put out there when, I guess, staggering the minutes when Tucker is out there? If you go small ball, the initial three that came to mind to me were maybe Harris, Daniel House, Matisse Thybul, and James Harden. I think you got some spacing, you got defense. Matisse, it's all known, and we're not going to go down the rabbit hole, that we would like his offensive game to improve, even if it's just a spot-up shooter. But I think that's a viable lineup if Embiid is in foul trouble or getting a breather, if you need Tucker to play that small ball five, because, I don't know, maybe Paul Reed is in foul trouble. Maybe he also needs a breather or just to switch it up on opposing teams.
Agreed. I think we've got recent evidence that Paul Reed and Matisse Thybul together isn't a great idea. I've thought that Paul Reed had potential to expand his game some more. I actually asked about that at his exit interview, whether he envisioned himself doing so and becoming a stretch five. And he said, sure, he's going to work on his shot, and that's a part of his game, as he's shown in the G League. But he likes banging down low. He likes being physical. And he understands also that the Sixers don't want him jacking up threes. But boy, if Paul Reed became a player that opponents needed to respect beyond the arc, then I think it enables you to play him in more lineups and not be so worried about putting Matisse Thybul next to him and things along those lines. But yeah, I think PJ Tucker overall expands your versatility, and you feel good about the idea of playing him next to someone like Thybul, who as of now is deemed a non-shooter by most teams the Sixers will face.
I hear you. What are you most looking forward to see what Doc Rivers and the coaching staff does with this rotation?
I think Melton is a really intriguing player. And I think he's a little similar to Tucker in that the listed height is deceiving in terms of how many lineups you can play him with. This is a guy with like a almost 6'9 wingspan, and a tenacious, disruptive, just really, really good defensive player. And I think that opens up a lot of neat possibilities for Doc Rivers to experiment with. So I think on the surface, when I started looking at Melton, my thought was, geez, I don't know how much you can play him with Tyrese Maxey, just because these are two 6'2", 6'3 guys. And we know that didn't work out too well defensively for the Sixers at the beginning of the year when the Sixers used Seth Curry and Tyrese Maxey. But the more I think about it, just the fun those two can have in transition and forcing turnovers and starting the fast break and just being a dynamic, lively duo, I think I buy into that a little more, and I want to see it. And I want to see these two guys like grow their games next to each other. I think that, like, from a fan's perspective, could be really entertaining. D'Anthony Melton, yes, he's an established player in this league, but he's only 24, and I think does have potential to grow his game in the pick and roll a little, to improve as an off the dribble three-point shooter, to improve his facilitating. And him doing some of that next to another like ascending player in Tyrese Maxey, I think that could be a fun little regular season storyline for the Sixers. And if those two get a lot of reps together, then you can assess how you feel about that duo, you know, looking ahead to the playoffs. So I think that is up there for me with what I am curious to see. And I think also just I think about duos that the Sixers should want to play a lot. And so many of them include James Harden, which I think speaks to, yes, his game has declined a tad from his prime, but he still makes his teammates better in so many ways. So Maxey and Harden, Harden and Embiid, Harden and Niang, Harden and Thibault, like there are already so many of these little James Harden and some other player that he makes better duos that I think the Sixers should want to play a lot. And yeah, it's on Doc Rivers to figure out which of those are best and the other three to put around those players and all of those sort of questions. And I would expect a lot of experimenting, a lot of trial and error off the bat. And there are just a lot of options here, I think, more so than last year.
So I want to get back to Harden, but before we move on from Melton, who the Sixers acquired, and what does this mean for Shake Milton? I feel like they're similar. Shake has proven that he could be a quality NBA player, even though it hasn't always been consistent. Unless Doc goes a lot of like three guard lineups, does this mean like Shake is going to be buried in the bench possibly?
I don't think he's got I think Melton's minutes are in all likelihood more secure than Shake Milton's minutes. I think that's a fair way to look at it for now. Shake Milton, I think, has proven that he can handle fluctuating roles and does have a certain just ability to adapt to situations. But if we're being honest, the Sixers don't have a true traditional backup point guard right now. Passing and running an offense is definitely not De'Anthony Melton's strength. I think Shake Milton is adequate to capable in that area, but it also isn't great. So I would imagine Shake Milton will get chances as both a one and a two. He'll get to play some next to Harden, some next to Melton, some next to Maxey, and the Sixers will figure out what works and who's best. But I do think Shake Milton, perhaps last postseason, was a tad overlooked and underrated by Doc Rivers. Maybe this year Rivers will give him some more early season opportunities to rectify that. I don't think Rivers was, you know, doing anything indefensible. I think he didn't have many great pieces to turn to off the bench, and Milton wasn't, you know, wowing him, you know, every chance he got. But I do think he's proven himself to be a two-way player who can, you know, score, who can get hot, who can create shots. And I think the Sixers and most teams could still use that off their bench. So I don't think he's got anything locked down, but I also think he should be reasonably well positioned to not be rotting on the bench. I think that particular scenario wouldn't make a lot of sense to me.
I hear you. All right. Last thing I had on the rotation, you mentioned Harden earlier. James Harden hasn't played less than 35 minutes a game since he was in Oklahoma City. And I don't know for a fact, but I would be willing to guess during his entire time in Houston, the only player that played more minutes than him in games might be Kawhi Leonard before the injury and LeBron James. So there's a lot of miles on those legs, especially with the usage rate as high as it was during his time in Houston. Is it realistic that the Sixers can go get a good playoff seeding position while not using up his minutes, probably getting it down to 31, 32 minutes a game, under 35 either way? I believe Harris and Embiid were around 34 minutes last year, and still to save Harden's energy and legs for the playoffs and take off from there.
31, 32, I don't see that happening. I do think some interesting context here is we remember when James Harden started off with the Sixers. He was returning from this hamstring injury. And I remember I looked at the numbers 8 or 9 games into his Sixers tenure, and it was 39, 40 minutes a game. And I asked Doc Rivers whether the team was okay with that, and he acknowledged no, that was a bit heavy. But he also explained part of the logic with playing him heavy minutes was just you want him to be up to game speed, you know, rhythm, chemistry-wise. And then also with the hamstring, the Sixers didn't want to play it overly cautiously and then have too steep of a ramp up that would lead to a re-injury. They wanted him to be getting a lot of minutes on that hamstring, and that, you know, the team's medical opinion, the folks who are, you know, responsible for those sort of decisions, was that was the best path to take. So I think, therefore, a serious decline in minutes still strikes me as unlikely, because the team is into that idea of you avoid injury by testing the hamstring. So I think, though, 39 to 40 minutes, it's too many for James Harden, and the Sixers, like all teams, are relying on their top-end talent, and they need Joel Embiid and James Harden and Tyrese Maxey to be healthy in the playoffs if they want to win the Eastern Conference, get beyond the second round, etc. So, yeah, I think a scenario where Harden winds up with 36 minutes a game, 35, and has some load management day sprinkled in, as the Sixers did last year, that would be a decent bet as far as how this plays out for James Harden.
Oh, okay. Love the knowledge and information. Noah, our last topic before we get out of here, we talked about it a little on the previous pod. It was more the Tyrese Maxey role, him getting up early to practice, and what Sam Cassell has been doing. Sam Cassell seems to be just beloved by the fans and people who are surrounding the team for how he has helped develop and improve Tyrese Maxey's game. I've been a long supporter of Sam Cassell. I felt like he should have gotten a head coaching job at some at this point by now. What can you tell us about Sam Cassell and just everything that's going on with the assistant coaches over in Camden?
Yeah. So Sam Cassell was at everything I expected and then some. Getting to talk with him one-on-one for this recent story I did on Tyrese Maxey's offseason and development. It was funny. We talked for a good 20, 25 minutes, and then we abruptly wrapped up when I hear Cassell yell out at Tyrese Maxey, like, "Hey, put a shirt on." Just kind of joshing him and having fun with Maxey before, you know, one of their many workouts together. But he's worked closely with James Harden. Maxey and Harden, as I got into in this story, have been doing work together as well this offseason. I think Cassell has just so much experience to call upon, and that enables him to be more blunt than the average NBA assistant coach. He's, as Spencer Rivers told me, just very straightforward with these guys. There's no dancing around what a player needs to improve or where a player is weak. It's like, you need to improve your mid-range game. Here's how we're going to do it. And let's get to work. But he's also capable of just having fun and making the work feel, you know, easy and natural, I think, in some ways. So he's just got so many innate skills as a player development guy that I think the Sixers are lucky to have. And he takes a lot of pride in his guys make big leaps. And you look at the track record, and that is indeed the case with John Wall, Bradley Beal, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, now Tyrese Maxey. He's just a fascinating figure. I was glad I got to get a little bit of his insight on Maxey as well. And, I think the Sixers having Sam Cassell as an assistant coach, that's an advantage over many of the assistant coaches in the NBA.
I remember, well, you think, remember the celebration that Sam Cassell used to do, the Big Cojones celebration. You think he's going to pass that down to Tyrese Maxey? We could see that this upcoming season.
Yeah, so if I think Tyrese Maxey is a little naturally more humble than Sam Cassell. I think, yeah, Sam Cassell, like, to his credit, emphasized to me, this is not about him. Like, his basketball career is written, and he is all about just passing on knowledge and seeing the other guys succeed. But, yeah, Tyrese Maxey, I think, will develop some of his trash talk. I wouldn't be surprised if that improves through osmosis with Cassell, and then even Spencer Rivers tries to bring that out of him. They try to, you know, see if they can get a little of the fire going, and perhaps, you know, Tyrese Maxey won't be 100% smiling. There'll be a little bit of trash talk, you know, in his future.
Tyrese Maxey reminds me a little of Larry Fitzgerald, just in a sense of just being super nice. And, like, there was a story Richard Sherman was talking about, like, players he, like, who was the easiest to get under skin, trash talking this player, that player. He's like, I couldn't trash talk Larry Fitzgerald because I would say something. He would just ask, like, how my grandmama's doing and things like that. And he was just such a nice guy. So I'm not saying players are reacting to Tyrese Maxey that way, but that's how I can see Tyrese Maxey. Like, oh, man, air ball. He's like, oh, man, how's the family doing? Like, your kids all right? Like, I can see that going down that way.
I love that. I love that cross-sport comp. No, I think that's spot on. I think actually it's a little unsettling for some guys to face someone that nice and that smiley and that likable. So yeah, I think Tyrese Maxey's got that in his bag. And but there will be, I think, a little more of the conventional trash talk coming out as he grows in confidence. And yeah, he's a big time reason to be, I think, excited about the Sixers heading into this season.
Plenty of reasons to be excited about the Sixers headed into this season. Noah, before we get out of here, anything you want to tell the people, the viewers on YouTube, the listeners of the pod?
No, thank you for listening. As always, I apologize for the point you mentioned with the eyes not always being level. No eye rolling intended. I'm going to work at being more straightforward to the camera. But yeah, as we touched on the last couple pods a little bit, I did write this lengthy feature on Tyrese Maxey and the work he does with Spencer Rivers and Sam Cassell. So if you haven't checked that out, it is out there, and there's a lot more that I touch on it in that piece. And yeah, then moving forward, we've got some more film review content in the works, touching on a little of the backup center discussion that we hit on today as well.
Well, he's Noah Levick. Follow him on Twitter at Noah Levick. I'm Ben Barry. Twitter at I am Ben Barry. No Danny Palmels. He's on vacation. Be safe. I want to thank you for listening to the Sixers Talk podcast presented to you by Wilmington University. Will you work?